Good afternoon. It's the 20th of March 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish, and with me in the studio is Mike Robinson. And as you can see, we can, well, we're happy.
Yes. Today is World Happiness Day.
World Happiness Day. So there we are.
We will be talking about that a little later. But we're going to start off with Robert Peston, who's posted a happy video on ITV. Attempting to be a bit more sort of modern and do the sort of YouTube generation thing. I guess that's his kitchen. But anyway.
I think he needs to empty the dishwasher, actually. I had a little look at that photograph and there's a lot of dirty dishes there.
Okay. Well, apparently the Prime Minister, he says, is more likely than not to call an early election. And he's saying that this is despite initially stating that she had no intention to do so. He said that it would be difficult. He said it won't be desperately easy, but it's not impossible. Well, in fact, it is pretty much impossible, Brian, and that's the key point, because what Theresa May said, I guess about a week and a half ago, was that they are not going to repeal the Fixed-Term Parliaments Act, which was one of the disasters of constitutional change that they made in this country a few years ago. And of course, what the first Fixed-Term Parliaments Act says that she cannot call an election before 2020. Unless she either has a vote of no confidence in herself, she could do that, or she has to persuade a majority of two-thirds in the House of Commons to call an election. Well, unfortunately, a two-thirds majority in the House of Commons would be 434 votes. But even if every other opposition party, aside from the Labour Party, ganged up with the Tory party, that would still only be 420 votes. So they would need to have some Labour members voting for an early general election. And despite how much, or because of how much the Parliamentary Labour Party despises Jeremy Corbyn, that ain't going to happen. They're you know, because they're nervous about not regaining their seats.
Yeah.
So that isn't going to happen. So Robert Peston talking nonsense as usual, I think.
From his kitchen with the dirty dishes. Well, we got some traction over the weekend on the subject of Berlin supporting independence for Scotland. And I pushed out this little tweet. It seems to have gone quite well. I think it's got 163 retweets. So that was good. I simply asked if people had read the report in the National correctly, because they were showing a map where Berlin had been supporting funding, or had been putting forward funding for Scottish independence. And I coupled it with a little joke about Nippy and her flick. Mm. It's quite an interesting question, really. The map shows Berlin funding, but of course it won't be Berlin. It's going to be people and organisations. So the question is, who
is actually giving the money?
Who is actually giving the money? Where is that money coming from? Mm. And as we're going to be hearing a little bit later in the news, of course, that Germany has now become our friend.
Very much so. What's next?
Well, probably this one here, Gordon Brown, which is, we must be desperate if Tony Blair's been pulled back into the political arena. And Breitbart here with a headline from Gordon Brown. Gordon Brown promotes federal UK as patriotic alternative to breaking up Britain. I've read this article a couple of times and I don't really get it. But apparently Gordon Brown has said, well, at the moment there's some problems because the EU is going to give all the powers back to the UK, and that means Westminster is going to be in control. I'll just bring up this particular bit. It says the status quo has been overtaken by events, because unless powers now with the European Union are repatriated from Brussels to the Scottish Parliament, the Welsh Assembly and the regions, Whitehall will have perpetrated one of the biggest power grabs by further centralising power, employment and energy.
That's a very interesting thing to say, isn't it? I mean, we gave away all the power that we had in the first place as a nation.
Yeah.
But if we take it back, that's a power grab.
Yes. Okay. I thought you'd be interested in this one, Mike, because yeah. I know that you weren't able to see it before the news. But I think it's good, and it's made me particularly happy that Gordon Brown, who did so much for this nation, these islands, has been brought back into the political arena to give his opinion.
Well, he did save the world, Brown, in 2008.
Yep.
Yeah. OK. Well, Boris has been in Ethiopia. He's still in Eastern Africa. And here he is in his jogging gear. He was out jogging. And this is his first visit to Ethiopia as Foreign Secretary. And he was outlining the potential for a deeper partnership on prosperity and regional security. Sorry. So he's there. Let's just read that again. A deeper partnership on prosperity and regional security. So Ethiopia has 13 million people currently in need of food assistance, and that figure is going to rise. But we're there to gain a deeper partnership on prosperity. How does that work?
Security as well.
Yeah, but prosperity.
Well, I think that works because if we remember the, who was it? The first Sea Lord was talking about increased power through humanitarian aid.
Well, indeed. Well, we'll come on to that in one second. He said, Boris Johnson said, on my first visit to Ethiopia, I've been excited to see great examples of the ever-increasing cooperation between our two countries. Together, the UK and Ethiopia can work to make our countries and the region stronger, safer and more prosperous, from combating the devastating drought to enhancing security for people in neighbouring Somalia. We have much that unites us, and I look forward to continuing and strengthening this relationship in years to come. So let's just look at the situation in Ethiopia. 2017, a drought, 13 million people in need of food assistance, 9.1 million people without access to water, 1.9 million need support to prevent their cattle dying, 3 million children and pregnant women to be acutely malnourished by May. And what are we doing about it? Absolutely nothing. Well, in response, they say the UK has increased much needed support to Ethiopia, giving an extra £11.5 million to provide around 800,000 people with life-saving clean water, basic food and emergency nutrition. If that's the case and that's going to have a massive impact, then why is the number of people, why is the government itself saying that the number of people that are going to starve increasing?
I'll say nothing at that point. I'll let the audience do it for themselves, I think.
Indeed. So they are calling for donations to be made to dec.org.uk, and they're saying that £25 could provide a month's supply of life-saving peanut paste for a malnourished child, £60 could provide clean drinking water for two families for a month, £100 could provide supplies to a clinic treating severely malnourished children for a week. But the point here is, Brian, I think that, of course, British policy has been to refuse that these countries develop. And so this is disgraceful. We're going to throw 60 quid to make to give two families some clean drinking water. How about investing a significant amount of money and giving them a pipe that provides water?
Because you want to keep them under control, Mike. And I think it's amazing that we are seeing Britain degenerate, collapse. In the news today, we've got some language from people who have commented on articles in the press. They're talking about chaos. It's to do with defence, but we could talk about other areas. Same tactics in these countries overseas. Keep them chaotic, and then they can simply be plundered at will. I think we might have had a small spelling, a typo, it's known, in Ethiopia. There's a few eagle-eyed people in the chat box.
Oh, okay, apologies.
So I think since it's World Happiness Day, we can smile because mistakes are only part of the learning process. The BBC makes them, so we're catching up.
Absolutely. Well, Priti Patel was speaking this morning at the Bond conference. Now, Bond is the UK membership body for organisations working in international development or supporting those that work in international development through funding, research, training and other services. It was established in 1993. It has 450 member organisations, ranging from, they say, from large agencies with a worldwide presence to smaller specialist organisations. And Priti Patel's message absolutely was, the NGO sector is mine. That was her message. She said that globally, we have to work collectively to solve big issues such as defeating poverty. She said the UK boasts an extraordinary number of small charities that do amazing, often highly innovative work in the world's poorest places. And she said that these smaller organisations are a crucial part of global Britain. or what Global Britain offers on international development. So what she did was she announced a new small charities challenge fund for charities with an income of less than £250,000. And she announced a new partnership between the Department for International Development and the Charities Commission to help charities build governance capabilities. So in other words, we're going to bribe them, and then we're going to put them under the auspices of the DFID and the Charities Commission, which is then going to control how those charities operate.
Reframe them first.
Absolutely.
Reframe, then control.
Absolutely, because this new partnership will provide tailored training to small and medium-sized organisations managing humanitarian and development projects. So there you go, Priti Patel intending to take the big society model where you have centralised control brought to the lowest level.
And then pushed out through the Commonwealth. So all of these aid agencies are going to be UK government agents, reframed, and then they're going to drive big society through the Commonwealth.
Well, that's absolutely right. But of course, where is she particularly focused at the moment? The Horn of Africa, East Africa, the countries that Boris is visiting over the last couple of days, and the countries that are suffering so badly from drought. That have never been allowed to develop and are subject to war because we're going in with our NGOs and other soft power and fomenting
war.
Yeah.
But at least they'll be happy, Mike. They'll be starving, they'll be short of water, but they're going to be happy.
Mm. What can we say?
Show a picture of humanitarian aid arriving.
Okay. Arriving in Estonia. Yes, indeed. We're moving on to defence matters now. 120 troops have arrived in Estonia as part of Britain's biggest deployment in Eastern Europe for decades. These are soldiers from the 5th Battalion, the Rifles Battle Group, including members of an Armoured Engineer Squadron, Military Police Detachment, Artillery Group, Port Task Group, and they arrived at Amari Air Base last night. They were welcomed by the Defence Minister of Estonia, and these 120 soldiers join others to bring the overall contingent there from Britain to 800. So NATO, quite by coincidence, have published this nice map which shows where they're operating. And this is all being done under the NATO banner at the moment. And so if we just look at Europe, we can see that Estonia is up in the top right-hand corner there, right on Russia's borders. This is what we're up to. The UK is taking a leading role, the Minister of Defence said, in NATO's enhanced forward presence alongside several other contributing nations. The deployments are designed to assure NATO allies of the mutual commitment to collective European security. So let's have another picture there. This UK-led Estonia battle group is one of four NATO multinational deployments in the eastern part of the alliance. Other nations are deploying to Latvia, Lithuania and Poland. The last of which, well, Poland, that is, will also include 150 UK personnel on a persistent rotational basis. So they are all getting on the plane in the first place. Now, what did Michael Fallon have to say? He said that he was proud that the UK is leading the Estonian battle group. In the face of an increasingly assertive Russia, NATO is stepping up its commitment to collective defence. Britain's troops will play a leading role in Estonia and support our US allies in Poland as part of a wider effort to defend NATO. But this is the key point, that he's proud that we are leading this battle group, Brian.
And it was, what, 120 men going forward there, Mike, wasn't it, in that?
Yes, to create a total contingent of 800 personnel.
800 personnel. So we're talking minuscule forces on the scale of things, and we're going to see in a minute why those deployments have to be small, basically, because there aren't any troops.
But nonetheless, it is dangerous.
Agreed.
Yes. Okay, so, well, we've been talking about trade quite a lot recently, and one of the points that we've been making is that TTIP may be more or less dead, but what Britain has done is to realign itself to create a load of bilateral trade agreements. This is the intention. Which will ultimately create a nest or a mesh of trade agreements which will look very much like TTIP. Well, it looks like, as we've been saying for a long time, they're doing exactly the same with defence. We've got the British-French Defence Pact. Defence Pact. Now we've got a British and German Defence Pact on the cards. So this Financial Times, the Times also reported this. Theresa May hopes, they say, that European security contribution will win Brexit goodwill in Europe. So we're going in, we're saying that we're sticking with you. This is nonsense. This is a bit of fake news from the Financial Times, this particular quote. It says, Theresa May hopes European security contribution will win Brexit goodwill. This was a condition of the referendum. This was decided before or when, what's his name, Cabbage Patch, David Cameron, yes, sorry, his name completely escaped me there for a second. This was decided when David Cameron was doing his pre-referendum tour of Europe, and it was a condition absolutely laid out by the European Commission that of Europe, that European military unification would be part of the Brexit deal. So what is the Financial Times saying? They're saying that Britain and Germany are set to sign a new defence cooperation deal after the UK launches Brexit as Theresa May attempts to reinforce claims that she's not turning her back on Europe. The British Prime Minister is seeking to emphasise Britain's big contribution to European security to gain goodwill among her 27 EU partners amid concerns that the Brexit negotiations could prove very tough and might even break down. Well, this is what the Ministry of Defence had to say. As part of our leading role in European security, we're stepping up on bilateral defence cooperation with our European partners and allies. Britain's Strategic Defence and Security Review in 2015 upgraded our defence relationship with Germany, and as part of this, we're working on a joint vision statement on future cooperation. What they're doing is building these bilateral agreements, so we're going to end up with a mesh of bilateral agreements which will result in European military integration. We've got the Franco-British, the British-German, German-Netherlands, German, Romanian, and so it goes on.
Yeah, but of course, ultimately, Germany is the military powerhouse in Europe, and therefore it makes complete sense that the British nuclear deterrent, which is being passed through the French hands at the moment, will ultimately end up under German control. So, interesting stuff.
That's you.
Is it? This one is me. I'm so happy. I'm having trouble concentrating, actually. Let's have a look at Mr. Fallon here, because, well, there's been a very interesting article in The Express, which is saying that basically 20% of the British Army simply left last year. So this is what part of the quote. The shocking figure represents almost one in five of the 83,340 soldiers serving and is thought to be the greatest single fall in 20 years. If this figure is correct, Mike, this means that the army is effectively no longer functioning. It isn't to do with the total number of soldiers leaving. It's to do with the number of NCOs, because the non-commissioned officers are the people that run the army. And if one in five of them has gone, the army is at a point of no longer being able to function. And of course, we can expect Michael Fallon to be laughing about this, because he is pro-European. He was a member of the European movement. This man is not going to do anything to break away from the European Union. And to have this chaos in Britain's armed forces simply helps build European military unification. Now, it was quite interesting, some of the comments on the Express website to this. We've got the top one here. Can you blame them? Can you blame them leaving when they kill the enemy coming back here? They're charged with murder. Just whose side are the British government on? Well, I've put a caption there. We know that the government is not on the side of the British population. They're working for somebody else. Britain has fallen to the enemy within. Nothing left to fight for, it's all over. Well, the first part of that statement is correct. We are indeed fighting an enemy within. However, the fight has only just begun, and it's up to all of us to take on these people. We're talking treason within Westminster. It's up to us to do something to stop it. So I'm going to have to say to Judge Jeffreys, if you think it's all over, we certainly don't think that. Robin123 has said, kill the enemy, kill the terrorist who wants to kill you and go to jail due to this silly, stupid rule. Only idiots would join up. Well, it's not a silly, stupid rule. This is a calculated policy by the British government in order to do exactly what the Express report is talking about, which is people are so depressed, morale is so bad that people are now simply leaving the army in droves. And we've got another comment here. It's I've brought it up on screen so that you can actually freeze this and have a look at it yourself. I'll just give you some of it. It's a very good piece. It says MOD is an oxymoron. It's a self-perpetuating civil service club that looks after its own interests. It's continued to grow in size, wasting money. Defence cuts have always fell on the sharp end of the teeth, arms. Regiments have been decimated, destroying hundreds of years of regimental history. It goes on to say, a lack of moral fibre and integrity by generals who never once fell on their swords when told to accept cuts in equipment or training budgets or manpower. It's general and mod chaps all wearing the same school tie. I think there's a lot of truth in this, Mike, and I have to say that it appears at the moment that certainly retired senior military officers appear either totally ignorant of the scale of this collapse of Britain's armed forces, or they are, as this writer says, utterly gutless, and they need some encouragement to stand up and be counted as we see this damage being carried out by Westminster. It goes on here, so I'll leave you to have a read of some of this, but basically this man just says, I agree with every word. He's got some relatives who've joined the armed forces. But down here, I thought this was very telling. He's saying that some of the young soldiers leaving the military are doing so because they are desperately concerned that they are going to be asked to soldier for a, quote, European army. So this is exactly what we've been talking about. And of course, this is real policy. And the young soldiers are seeing this policy come through the army. But it doesn't just affect the British Army. Let's have a look at the Navy. And we've got an extraordinary Mail article here where they are crowing inside Britain's largest warship as she returns from deployment in the Gulf. Stunning new images reveal 667-foot-long vessel's journey as it returns home to UK. So the whole thing is about the size of this immensely powerful ship. I noticed they've used feet to measure the length because that's bigger than if they'd have measured it in metres. And this is complete nonsense. This happens to be a modest sized warship on the scale of warships. This is nothing very special. But it isn't just this warship's coming back, because the key point is that this warship is going to be decommissioned next year, sold and scrapped, and or scrapped. So I'm not really sure what the point of this is. We're celebrating a warship coming back to be scrapped. Perhaps this is part of World Happiness Day, Mike, that we should be happy even though the ship is going to be scrapped.
Must be.
So let's have a look at the quality of the reporting. So what else did they say? Well, in a scoop, they said a map was found inside the ship. You're laughing. This is World Happiness Day. They found a map inside the ship. Let's have a look at the map. Here it is. It's got a brochure of HMS Ocean on top of it. High threat at the bottom. Mission-specific training, Ocean in Alexandria. This is a map of the journey back from deployment. But I just happened to spot top right that we've actually got plates and napkins. So this table is prepared for lunch. And of course, what this is a map made for public and press briefings. But according to the Daily Mail journalist, this was a map which somebody found inside the ship.
Right. Good stuff.
It's Pirates of the Caribbean. I can't really describe it. And this happened as I was looking at the article. And we've got a cartoon video game. I wasn't sure whether this was a real report or this was part of HMS Ocean.
Yes.
It's difficult to say, isn't it? And we'll go on, because Peter Hitchens from the Daily Mail wrote this over the weekend. We're one step and some fruit short of being a banana republic. And he was talking about HMS Dauntless. This is £1 billion worth of Type 45 destroyer, which he says went into service in 2010 and hasn't moved an inch under her own power for a whole year. She's now designated a training ship.
Wow.
£1 billion warship, now designated a training ship, and simply stays alongside. And he says we should change our ship naming policy, do away with the romantic titles of old. Instead, we can have HMS Motionless, HMS Deficit, HMS Mothballs, and HMS Dunroman.
Yeah.
Well, very good. But of course, the trouble is that Mr. Hitchens can't grasp that the Banana Republic is the result of what I call premeditated, calculated treason within Westminster. This is dangerous stuff. So as the services are deliberately destroyed, the Army, the Royal Navy, the Air Force, we have Theresa May carrying on as if there was no problem. And we have Michael Fallon boasting that the Russians are somehow frightened of British deployments of 120 men. This is cartoon land, Mike. So what can we do? We are going to say, for people who want to do more than just email, come to the Albert Hall, Nottingham, 22nd of April 2017, for the British Constitution Group moot. This is not about set piece talks. This is about people coming together in a series of discussion groups to exchange ideas, know-how on what is going on and what we should all be doing in order to stop it. And I'll also remind people that 22nd of May, we've got Aviate with Ian Crane, number of speakers. I will be speaking, and my topic will be transformational newspeak. And I will be back on the subject of taking the lid off reframing through language. And I better say today, with a smile on my face, because it's World Happiness Day, that some of the UK column viewers have got very upset indeed that we have dared to point a finger at mindfulness. I'm not embarrassed to say that we are pointing that finger at mindfulness because we are watching one of the most dangerous government reframing programs this country has ever seen. It's time people understood it. And I find it remarkable that I've now asked five organizations dealing in mindfulness, are there any risks? No response, Mike. A stunning silence. And before I hand over to Mike again here, we'll just say that we did pick up on the fact that George Osborne was taking over as editor of the Evening Standard there in London. This was a diagram we produced a couple of years ago because we were very interesting that we had Mr. Lebedev coming in as owner of this independent newspaper. And of course, connections back, well, this is his father, isn't it? Alexander Lebedev, ex-KGB billionaire, Moscow bank owner. So presumably, George Osborne being rewarded for his part in helping to destroy UK.
We're about to come on to that. So as we have said, it is World Happiness Day. Here we go. International Day of Happiness, 20th of March. What is the International Day of Happiness, according to the United Nations? It is a day to be happy, of course. And since 2013, the United Nations has celebrated the International Day of Happiness as a way to recognise the importance of happiness in the lives of people around the world. In 2015, the UN launched 17 Sustainable Development Goals that seek to end poverty, reduce inequality and protect our planet, three key aspects that lead to well-being and happiness. So they have released the World Happiness Report. And the first thing to say about the World Happiness Report, of course, is that there is no definition of what is happiness or what is well-being. So it becomes very difficult to know what it is they're talking about. It should be noted that in 2016, the OECD committed itself to redefine the growth narrative to put people's well-being at the centre of government's efforts, and that's what this is all about.
Yeah.
So well-being at the centre of government's efforts, and of course we should remember that well-being is at the centre of, for example, the Named Person Scheme in Scotland, and most of what social services is doing with
child
families.
Child protection, yeah.
Yes. So the World Happiness Report measures subjective well-being, and that is how happy the people are and why. And what we now know is that Denmark, Iceland, Switzerland and Finland are the top four happiest countries in the world. Central African Republic came last. And in the report, for example, I thought it was a little ironic because they particularly focus a whole chapter on growth and happiness in China, 1990 to 2015. And what they're saying is that in recent years, China's happiness has multiplied fivefold in the last 25 years, in fact. And what's interesting, of course, is that, China isn't doing anything with regard to sustainable development goals. The type of development that they're doing is something quite different. So it is quite amusing that this happiness report is all about the sustainable development goals, but China's form of development isn't sustainable, but it seems to be having a better effect than the sustainable development goals. Pity for the UN, that is. Anyway, the US and the UK came 14th and 19th, respectively. As we mentioned, Brian, here is one man that's pretty happy at the moment, George Osborne, who now has 6 jobs. So let's just look at what he gets paid for each of these. So as a Member of Parliament, he gets paid £74,000 a year. As a senior advisor at BlackRock, he gets paid £650,000 a year. As a speaker on the speaking circuit in the United States for the Washington Speaker Bureau, he gets paid £786,000 per year. He's also a Kissinger Fellow, for which he gets paid £120,000 per year. He's chairman of the Northern Powerhouse Project, so he's working to break up the United Kingdom. He's quite happy to do that for nothing. So he does that for nothing. And, of course, he's editor of the Evening Standard, and we don't actually know how much he's getting paid for that. Yeah. So he has an annual salary at the moment of something greater than £1.5 million per year for doing 6 jobs, none of which he can be doing very well.
I wouldn't have thought so. I'm just looking at his face, and initially I thought that he was unhappy until I realised that that is the face of the new happiness regime. When you are happy in the new world, you will look like that.
That's absolutely true. So here is a happy man, although I have heard that it snows a lot in George Osborne's world.
And expensive snow.
Yes, so that's probably part of what's making him happy. But anyway, what about everyone else in the UK? Do you think they're happy? Well, no, because in fact, new data reveals that suicide is now the biggest cause of death for men under 50 in the United Kingdom. And more women are taking their own lives each year. That's according to Duncan Selby, Chief Executive of Public Health England. And the Office for National Statistics has released statistics on Friday, which show the jobs that people are doing, show suicides by the number of jobs or by the types of jobs that people are doing. So what Duncan Selby said was that suicide is the leading cause of death for men under 50, and more women are taking their own lives each year. Death by suicide is never inevitable, but for a person who is overwhelmed by feelings and events that appear insurmountable, it can seem like the only answer. So the Office for National Statistics analysis, which was commissioned by Public Health England, shows that really men in low-skilled labouring jobs in the construction industry, had a risk that was 3 times higher than the average for England. So what they're saying is there were 18,998 suicides in men and women aged between 20 and 64 between 2011 and 2015, and that constituted a rate of 12 deaths for every 100,000 people per year. For 7 in 10 of these suicides, they were able to identify an occupation. They said that males working in the lowest skill occupations had a 44% higher risk of suicide than the male national average. And the risk among males in skilled trades was 35% higher. So it goes on. We don't really need to dwell on the actual statistics, but they said that male and female carers had a risk of suicide that was almost twice the national average. And I think that's a major indictment on the society that we're living in at the moment.
That's true, Mike. We should also remind people, of course, that when I did a talk in Swansea, on that suicide cluster of teenagers and young people in South Wales. For the first time ever, there was a demonstration, there was police called, and that protest had been organised partly through the Labour movement and the National Students' Union, and it appeared that Labour MP Madeleine Moon was particularly hot under the collar. I had parents coming to me wanting to know more information, wanting to know what I was talking about in relation to the suicides. But the Labour Party whipped up quite a protest, and we know that a lot of parents didn't attend. But what I was warning about was the number of agencies that were using applied psychology on young children. And there is quite some evidence to show the immense risks attached to that type of training. But I'll just add that the number of suicides, as reported by the local press at that time, was climbing towards 100. But Madeleine Moon and other MPs put pressure on the press to stop reporting. They said if the press reported suicides, then there were further copycat suicides. So the suicides were not reported. However, those suicides continued. And we know that the numbers are well over 100. And I believe that they are still continuing, but no investigation.
Absolutely. Well, the question is, you know, how is happiness influenced? And perhaps we get a clue here. Propaganda, a key mechanism. But as newspapers become strapped for cash, social engineering and behavioural insights becoming a key part of their revenue stream. So this is why the Independent pushing out this kind of trash. But, the happiness index, this is social engineering on a global scale. They're actually assessing people's happiness to see what sort of effect policy making is having on people's lives. Here's a very simple example of what I believe is absolutely a piece of social engineering and behavioural insights gathering. This article in The Independent, 8 Things You Should Never, Ever Google. Of course, it has a big don't do it sign on there, which can only have one effect. People will do what they're told not to do. So lots of people are going to follow the instructions here. The instructions say, warning, this article contains not suitable for work and disturbing subject matter. They say Google is what paperbound encyclopedias were 100 years ago. However, unlike books, Google gives you access to information which actually doesn't contribute to your learning. And so they list 8 items here which you should not go and search. And of course, what's going to happen? People are going to search them. Google, of course, will track the search terms. They'll know who did and who didn't visit the Independent website first. And they'll track other online behavior for the people silly enough to search the subject matter that they've been told by the Independent to go and look at. That's all. This stuff's all guaranteed to make you happy, because, as I say, if you look through this list of 8 things, they're pretty disgusting, actually. All there to make us happy, but they're also there to track us and sort of make an assessment about what effect this type of material has on people's behaviour.
Yeah.
Just to end this subject, of course, will a shared society make us happy? Well, I don't think so. And I just want to highlight this new article on the UK Column website, the Shared Society Project. This shared society is what Theresa May is pushing extremely hard at the moment. But the question is, where did the idea of a shared, well, what is it and where did the idea come from? And we need to look at the Club de Madrid for that. I would like to ask everybody to read this article for a start, but most importantly, share it, because the Shared Society Project is something which is pretty key to what we're seeing from a policy perspective at the moment, and we need to understand what it is.
Okay, well, let's move on to one of the subjects that we've never dropped, and that is the abuse of children. I'm going to say a big thank you to one of our overseas viewers who pointed us at a freedom of information request which had gone into Avon and Somerset Police. This is it. It says child abuse involving witchcraft. And essentially it was asking for any data where it was child abuse involved in an accusation of witchcraft or possession by spirits. And there was a very detailed paragraph at the top which said, gave various forms of this, various names, etc. But it was a concise request, obviously made in very specific terms. And what was of great interest was the answer from Avon and Somerset. They said no information has been identified in relation to this request. In addition, Avon and Somerset Constabulary can neither confirm nor deny that it holds any other information relative to this. and it quotes section 23.5. And what is that about? Information supplied by or concerning certain security bodies. So somebody asks about witchcraft and children, and the reply that we get back from Avon and Somerset is that, well, no, we can't really tell you about this because of certain security bodies. And then they qualify section 23 itself, the Freedom of Information Act 2000, that this stipulates a generic bar on disclosure of any information applied by or concerning certain security bodies. So I was intrigued to know what would the connection be between children being abused through witchcraft and security services. Well, we haven't got an answer on that yet, but I think this is something for Avon and Somerset to be challenged on. And I then just thought, well, let's have a little look at this in context of the chief constable at the time. So 2005, it was this gentleman in control, Nick Gargan. He had to resign because he had some rather smutty photographs of a lady friend on his mobile phone. There were a few other problems. It was all played down at one point, but then it really stuck. And so he was forced to resign. So what does it say to us? Well, we had a rather mucky chief constable in post. But when we got asking about questions of nasty things happening with children, it's apparently so secret that it's not for the public.
Right.
Well, let's have another little look, because we've got a new chief constable now, Avon and Somerset Chief Constable Andy Marsh. And wasn't long before we found this headline: Bristol's top cop cleared of wrongdoing during child abuse inquiry. So although accusations of failures have been made by families in relation to child abuse, delighted to see that this gentleman was cleared.
And did he clear himself?
No, another policeman cleared him. This is the very man. So we've got Stephen Kavanagh from Essex. He was brought in to clear Chief Constable Andy Marsh. But I did find this headline, which said, "Frightening neglect of child abuse victims by Essex police is unacceptable, according to the children's charity."
So let me understand this. We've got one police force which is criticised by the children's charities for neglect of child abuse victims, investigating another police force for neglect of child abuse victims.
Yes, but I think you've got to look at this in a happy frame of mind, Mike, because you may feel that this is rather concerning, that we have one police force which is failing in protecting children, and we use that police force to come in to investigate another police force that's failing to protect children.
Sorry, did you say police farce there?
Probably did. really nothing to worry about. I just wanted to drop a label over the top of that, if I may, which is this. So how much child abuse evidence is being hidden by British Secret Services at the moment? Mm. It's not a question of is it, because we've now got a public statement that it is. We simply need to ask the questions: how much child abuse is being hidden by British Secret Services? So here's the man himself, and in the article he says, "Our investigations, our perseverance, our work with partners and our sensitivity in supporting victims and their families made that happen." He was talking about 33 child sex offenders being jailed. Remarkable number.
Yes.
Similarly, we dealt professionally and responsibly with the vast majority of more than 2,600 cases of children who went missing last year. So my question is, if 2,600 children went missing, and as far as I can see, this is just in the Essex police field of operations, how many of those children came back? If you multiply this figure by 43, I think it is, police districts across UK, you're talking about 112, 113,000 children missing at some stage per year. And this ties in remarkably well with statistics that I tried to find some years ago, or I did find some of those statistics, which indicated that roughly 10,000 children were missing a year.
And never come back. But we don't have a child trafficking or child abuse problem in this country.
No, of course, that's a ridiculous concept. But I'm also puzzled as to why there should be such a huge furore over the disappearance of Mandy McCann, tragic though that is, in relation to these statistics. And I think the public needs to be asking British security services how much information and evidence and data they hold on abused and missing children. Well, let's come in from a different angle, and we can tell you that the very brave Metropolitan Police officer that spoke out on UK Column Dispatches about the cover-up of child abuse, trafficking, prostitution and child deaths in London is really on the rack. The Met Police are going for him once again. They've got him back on half pay, and he's now facing a new set of discipline charges, which apparently relate to contact with the press. Now, that's not with us. That's actually the implication is that he's been talking to other press agencies. But his description of the Met Police at the moment, absolutely brutal in trying to silence him and indeed four or five other police officers, male and female, who are also saying the same thing, that British police forces, including the Met, are deliberately covering up the abuse of children. And Cressida Dick, they are now heading the Met. This gentleman's had absolutely no support from Miss Dick at all, and no support from the policing minister, Brandon Lewis, who, of course, has never answered our open letter about what he was going to do. So we'll probably have to end on this note, which is a happy note, really, because it's congratulations to Cressida Dick, appointed by the London mayor, as the first woman to lead the Met Police. It's a vital role. And I did just notice that this tweet had come from our very own Harriet Harman, who just happened to be the former deputy leader of the Labour Party, who lobbied for rules on pornographic photos of children to be relaxed, and supported Liberty, National Council for Civil Liberties, when it was linked to the paedophile organisations PI and PAL. So I take it that we should be laughing at this point, Mike. We clearly should be happy. We're not really seeing orchestrated breakdown of UK, or are we? And indeed, is the reframing process for happiness in order that people should see it but simply ignore it?
Absolutely, because it doesn't matter how bad it gets, we're going to be happy about it.
We're going to be happy. Don't worry about the bad news. Let's just concentrate on being happy. Boris Johnson making all of those people in overseas countries happy. Estonia's going to be pretty happy shortly. It's looking good.
Yes.
Well, there we are. World Happiness Day, the report from UK Column. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. We've had a lot of fun. We think that Britain is in a world leading position, and as a result, we can all be pretty chirpy. And since all of our viewers and listeners are happy, I think I'm going to use this as an opportunity to say we need your support over funding. We want to expand the work that we can do as UK Column. We need more people subscribing. And we know there are a great many people who appreciate what we do. They watch the broadcast. They're following what we're doing via the website, via Facebook and Twitter. But they think because it's for free, we don't need to help. So we would like to say, with a big smile on our face, if you're enjoying and using information from UK Column, but you're not yet subscribing, please would you consider doing that? It will make you happy. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Bye.